Elfie Newman, and I am the children's director here at this campus. I have been doing it for about 12 years, going on to 12 years, and I've been in children's ministry pretty much all my life, since I was 12 years old, in one way or another, but at this campus for 12 years. And I also oversee the kids coordinators at our other four campuses that we have in the city. So, like all of you, I'm just a tad busy. Okay, right? So I just thought we could start this morning. I know it's before lunch, and I'm just going to ask you to close your eyes, and I just want you to picture your children's ministry. I want you to picture what it looks like in a week, what it looks like on Sunday morning. What are those first thoughts? What are the first things that you think about when I've asked you that question? Just give it a second. Okay, you can open your eyes now. I'm sure for many of you, that probably was the most rest you've had in a long time. Because we know as kids ministry is the hardest working ministry in the church, right? I always say we are. So I just want to hear from you. What were some of the things that popped into your mind? What were the first things that you saw when you were picturing your ministries? Just shout it out. There's no wrong answer. Don't be shy. Okay. Okay, good. So you saw some of your kids, you know, coming back and serving. Anybody else? What did you see? Yeah. No, not at all. Yes. 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 Right. So you saw your kids. You saw your week, how about your programming, scheduling, holes in your schedules, volunteer, you know, that whole, all of that, right? Toys, diapers, nursery, like all that stuff. Oh, somebody agreed back there. I didn't see that we had a little person back there. So all that is absolutely true. And when I first came on and started serving, I felt like I needed to do all of that and more. And it sort of felt like this. It sort of felt like I was trying to ride a surfboard, and I was trying to keep it all together, and there's all kinds of craziness happening underneath me. I'm sure you guys can relate to that. And it wasn't easy, and I wanted the picture to look like this. There. That's what I wanted. I wanted perfection, right? I love that picture. For all you type A's, I'm sure you think, it's so symmetrical. The contrast, it's straight. That's a perfect bow, right? Like that. That is what I really was striving for, that perfection. And it sort of kind of looked more like this, right? Christmas morning where paper is all over the place. And I just wasn't quite able to manage all of that stuff, the programming, the volunteers, the special events, all that stuff that always happens and needs to happen in our ministry. So I thought, well, there's got to be a better way. And through the years, as I have grown and the ministry has grown, I figured there needs to be a shift. And so all these things that we do all week long and on Sunday morning are super important. They are important because we wouldn't have church if we didn't do those things. So those things are very, very important. But there's one thing that is more important than all of that. And that is people. But I'm not talking just about your kids, your babies, and your youth, and elementary kids, your preschoolers. I'm not just talking about those people. I'm talking about your people, your leaders, and your volunteers. So when I say that, how does that make you feel? How does that phrase hit you? Does it make you feel uncomfortable? Does it sound a bit possessive? Does it sound a little territorial? Maybe even a little bit arrogant? Your people, your leaders, your volunteers? Well, and if it does, I hope I can change your mind, because really, they're your stewardship. And I know that's a very biblical sounding word. So I kind of looked at what the definition of that was, and Merriam-Webster is going to help us. This is what he says stewardship is. It is the conducting, supervising, or managing of something especially the careful and responsible management of something entrusted in one's care. So when you think of your people, do you ever think of them as people that God has entrusted to your care? Or are they just there to fill holes, roles, and schedules? To think of it like this, to think of it like God has entrusted them to you, it can be exciting and scary, but mostly scary, particularly if you're trying to do it all on your own. But if you want to grow a healthy culture, it has to start with your people. And so let's take a minute and just define what culture is. Culture is the set of shared attitudes, values, goals, and practices that characterizes an institution or an organization. And what I love about that definition is the word shared. And I think that's key. It can't just be you as leaders saying, this is what you need to do, and then hopefully they'll do it. Or this is what you need to do, and they decide to do something completely different. It has to be something that becomes shared where they're owning it, and everybody is doing the same thing. You initiate it, you start it, but everyone follows suit. Or more simply said, it is a place to belong. Do your people, once you've recruited them and you've trained them and they're showing up on Sunday mornings, do they feel like they belong? Or are they really just feeling like they're filling, again, a hole, a role, or a schedule? Because if you're stewarding them, then it needs to go beyond just filling the holes and the roles, right? It needs to go far more than that. It'll show that you actually care. And you guys might be thinking, I have so much to do. Like, I've got all this other stuff that we just, you know, when our eyes were closed, we were thinking about how do I do all this? And one of my favorite children's leaders today, Reggie Joyner, this is what he says. He says, if you want your leaders to make a weekly investment in kids, then you need to make a weekly investment in your leaders. What? Weekly? How do we do that? Right? And so, do any of you, like, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but what are some things, what are some ideas? Because I think sometimes if we're talking and other people are listening and they can hear our ideas, that, you know, it, sharing it really does make a difference. So what are some things that you might do weekly that you are investing, that shows that you're investing in your leaders? Anything that comes to mind? Yes.
Just like when I'm on top of them.
Yeah. Right. Very important. Right. Checking up on them. Yeah. Anybody else? Anything different?
At our church, we have to set up and take down the community center.
Yeah.
So the volunteers that came early to set up. And so it's a small group. It's more relationship as, like, they have the same team once a month.
Yes.
It's
good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, very good, very important. Praying, yeah, absolutely. Someone else, I think, back there, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, very important. You know, weekly emails, texts, phone calls, and checking in on them, absolutely. Not just thinking, oh, they've shown up great, you know, see them next week. Following up, continually following up, Monday mornings, Tuesday mornings, when you've noted something, and we all do, right? We're all walking through Sunday mornings, and you're like, okay, I did notice that. You know, remember to follow up on that on Monday morning, whether it's someone doesn't look very happy or is struggling with their small group, whatever that may be, don't let it go. Keep that connection, right? It's super important that we do that. Because when you do that, when you pour into your volunteers, when you pour into your leaders, they in turn will pour into the kids. It's just what happens, right? It took me about, and the other thing I want to mention about that is you're not going to know all your volunteers the same, right? You're going to have ones that you're going to be closer to because maybe they're part of your leadership team or you've just spent more time with them. And that's okay, because those ones you might talk a little bit more with, and the ones that you don't, I mean, you still definitely have to invest in them. But you should love them because of what they stand for. They're here investing in the next generation. They're here trying to make a difference, you know, in the life of a kid. And just that alone should make us want to invest in our leaders, right? It took me about 7 years. I remember just plugging in at this and pouring into the volunteers and letting them know that, you know, I cared, and listening and doing all these things we've talked about. And I remember one day we were at a conference, and I was kind of standing back watching them, and I was like, it's finally happened. Like, all these things that I've been working so hard to repeat over and over and over again, after about 7 years is when I first started to notice, this is how they're treating each other. This is how they're treating the kids. Now things are being repeated and replicated without me having to remind them all the time, right? Because that's the thing, reminding and, you know, telling them. They were starting to catch it. And it's strange how it happens. It's like, and once it catches momentum, it's just like that snowball, right, that's going down that hill. It just starts to go. And that's the funny thing about culture. It just happens so slowly. You really can't see culture change. It's like sitting in a pot of water as it heats up. One day you look up and realize it's changed. Kind of like the frog, right, in the water, just kind of sitting there. Oh, this is good. And then before you know it, it's like, ah! And, you know, he hops out. That's exactly like culture. You just have to, you know, keep at it. And all of a sudden you're like, it's finally changed, right? And so you might be asking, okay, before that, I want to talk about my husband, and I've been married for 24 years. I come from an Italian background, so my culture is Italian, and my husband is German. You probably couldn't have two more opposite cultures, right? Italians, passionate, loud, touchy-feely, lots of enthusiasm, very expressive, the whole thing. And then my husband, not so much. Actually, pretty much the opposite. Do you ever remember that movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding? That's my life. So when we first got married, he was like, what? They're crazy. Like, these people are crazy. It was such a culture shock for him. But over time, and over, you know, years, spending time with me, of course, and rubbing shoulders with my family, he started to, like, not only understand the culture, but like it. And started to do some of the stuff. I mean, he speaks with an Italian accent, or he can. Like, he can do a perfect Italian accent. He loves the food. He also can, he gets the little things, the twerks, the things that we do and why we do them, and understands them. And it's just because he's been with us over all these years, right? And that's the thing with culture. So you might think, well, where do I start with this? Well, you just start where you're at. Zechariah 4:10, the first part of that verse says, do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. You know, God is there cheering you on. Wherever that is, wherever you are, you start where you're at, and he's there just saying, yeah, you can do this, right? You start where you're at, and do not despise those small beginnings. Don't rush. You know, this is the thing I find with people sometimes, and, you know, talking to other ministries, they try things once or twice, maybe three times, and it didn't work. So we'll just give up and, you know, try something else. And my kind of rule here is we try something for a whole ministry season. Unless it's really bad, I will pull the plug. But if we start something in September, we do that till June. We don't change it. Because you need to give it a good amount of time to see if it's going to take off. And if you're constantly switching and changing things, then nothing is ever really going to take root. So you got to give it a good amount of time. When we first started to check in our kids, and I'm sure all of you have check-in systems in your kids' ministries, everyone's might be a little bit different. But we went, now this is years ago, where we went to the computer check-in where kids get a name tag and the parent gets the matching ticket. So that they cannot be dismissed, a child cannot be dismissed from a classroom unless the parent shows that matching ticket. Well, we never did that before. What we did before was a lot more casual. So we started doing this. Well, it wasn't great at first. like teachers were still releasing kids to parents because they recognized them, right? And they're like, well, I know that so-and-so's parent, so why do I have to, you know, look at that tag? Well, because one of our values is safety. And because that's one of our values, safety, then you're going to have to do this. And we kept reminding them over and over and over again, week after week after week after week. And it took a pretty much a good ministry year for everybody to kind of catch on. Now, if you come into this building on a Sunday morning, I mean, I'm sure if we could, we'd have kids stay overnight, because like nobody's releasing a kid to anybody if they haven't been shown that ticket. And if a parent loses a ticket, which happens, right? They're looking for me or Gwen or who I work with or any other leader to vouch for them, because there are no kids released because we said this is a value that we have, and we repeated it over and over and over and over again. And all the leaders got it, right? It's part of our culture. It's part of what we do. So don't give up too soon. I find that's one of the things that is the problem that people do. And one of my favorite Bible stories is in Nehemiah, and we just taught our kids that all of September. They were learning about Nehemiah. And you know his great, you know, famous speech when he's on that wall and he's like, I'm carrying on a great project and I cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? You know, Nehemiah was somebody that just kept at it. He didn't give up, and he loved his people. Nehemiah was a gatherer. If you read Nehemiah, he uses pronouns like we and us so much. It's not about I, right? He was a gatherer. And Nehemiah, the cool thing about him was he had these people building this wall together that they actually weren't carpenters and bricklayers and, you know, architects. They were perfume designers, and they were politicians and jewelry designers and merchants. But he had influence on them because he cared, right? So just remember that you don't have influence because you're right. You have influence because you care. Just because you're in charge, that doesn't give you influence. Just because you're, you know, the director, the pastor in the ministry, that won't make a difference. But if you care for people, that is what is going to give you influence. If you really want to influence the next generation, you actually have to spend some of your time with the people who are spending time with the kids. Right? Makes sense. We want all these great things for our kids. But unless you can divide yourself into 100 different rooms, you're not able to do it. So it's what you're pouring into these people that are going to make the difference to the kids. So you could be a kids person who really loves kids and wants to be with kids. I do too. I mean, I love being in a classroom with kids, but that's not my role anymore. My role is to ensure that what happens in those classrooms is because I poured into these volunteers. And so the result is still the same. The result would be like I would be in all these classrooms, right? So if we want to influence the next generation, we definitely have to spend time with the people who are spending time with our kids. And we talked a little bit about that earlier, about connecting with them, checking in on them, making sure that they've got what they need. You've got to read their body language sometimes. Sometimes people don't necessarily tell you what's going on a Sunday morning, but you can tell. You can tell by looking at them, by seeing, you know, their body language. And you need to follow up on stuff like that. I always say for people that your volunteers who maybe you're a bit closer with, when things happen outside of church, you know, if one of their loved ones dies or a parent dies, go to the funeral. Send a card. Make a meal. Pray for them. Right? We don't want to just love them because they're here and love them just when they're in here. But we need to let them know we care about them as human beings too. If it's their birthday, I called one of my leaders a couple of weeks ago. It was his birthday, and I had called him on his lunch, and I was on lunch too, and he didn't answer, but he saw that my number come up, and he called me back, and he was like, oh, what's wrong? You know, like, what's going on? Because I typically don't call, you know, Tuesday afternoon at lunch. And I said, I'm just calling to wish you a happy birthday. And he was like, what? Like, he's like, thanks. You know, like it really does speak so much when you do stuff like that outside of just Sunday mornings, right? So care for them, send a card, make a meal. We too, here on Sunday mornings in between our services, because we have two services, and even before, we have coffee and muffins and granola bars and stuff. And we encourage the team to come in and sit and just chat, talk about, you know, the Jets game or whatever it is, and have coffee and just fellowship together and just enjoy one another, right? And even if, you know, because our teams are scheduled month on, month off, if I see someone in the hallway, I'm like, come have a coffee. Even if they're not serving on that day, come join us. Always trying to gather, always trying to, you know, make sure everybody's feeling connected. Super important. Transferring of culture. It's really important that you're great volunteers. There are times that you might have to put them together with your not-so-great volunteers. And so when we are starting new people, a lot of times what I like to do is, instead of myself being in a classroom all the time or a small group with the kids, I will ask my great volunteers, and you all have them, your better volunteers, to come in and sit with them and actually show them the ropes. So what that does is it really encourages your not-so-great volunteers, because they're learning from a great volunteer, and your great volunteer is like, wow, thanks. You know, like that, they must think that I actually do a pretty good job. And so I will do that all the time, because when you're rubbing shoulders with people that you know you want to be like, that transference will definitely happen for sure. Create teams that love working together. When we start our ministry year, a lot of times people say, can I be on so-and-so's team? And I'm like, yes, you can, right? Even if I may not need them on that team, because I might need them, you know, somewhere else, I'm going to do that. Because if they love working together, again, that is going to transfer to the kids. And it's just going to be a healthy, happy environment. So, yeah, create teams that love working together. Great things can happen when ministry teams share a common set of values. These values have enormous influence on the culture of your ministry. So you all have values. I know you do. Yeah, and if you don't have values that you've got written down, I would encourage that you would write them down. But I know you all have them, whether it's safety. I mean, we have fun, biblical and relevant teaching, relationship, like relational things for us is really important. So whatever those values are, those are the things that you're going to want your leaders to repeat and to replicate. But you need to pour into them so that they can be pouring into the kids. And when they share, when you've got a team that shares common values and just gets it, when you know that they're going to do the thing that they're supposed to do without you telling them, boy, that's a beautiful day when that starts to happen. Because they've caught it. They're part of it, right? They feel like they own it as well. It's not just you telling and them doing. They're like, yeah, this is my ministry too. These are my kids. And that's what you want. People definitely, you know, it's not just about tools and tricks. It's relationship and care that matters the most. And that's the same thing with kids. I mean, if kids come in, particularly new kids, what do we want for, you know, we want them to feel connected. We want them to feel loved. And sometimes that's enough. If they feel safe and a place to belong when they first come in, that's definitely enough. And that's the same with our volunteers, with our people. They need to feel loved. People need to feel like they belong. And our job is to help volunteers be the best that they can be. Connection, it gives purpose and meaning to our lives. We weren't created to be alone. God created us to be in communities and with one another so that it gives us purpose for sure. So we've talked about people and how people matter. But you first are the people who matter most. I know that's a really bad sentence, but what I'm trying to say is self-care is really important. So if you're pouring into people, as we are when we're in children's ministry, and you're not taking the time to self-care, then that's not going to go well for you. And I can say that because I'm one of these people. I'm very bad at this. It's something that over time and over the years I've been trying to get definitely better at, but I'm not very good at this. But self-care is very, very important. Because if you can't care or you can't care or have empathy for others if you don't have it for yourself. And you might be thinking, great, now I got to take care of people, and now you're telling me I'm going to take care of myself? And I'm going to say yes, because there's a way to do it. And the way to do it, there is a healthy way to do it. And it's boundaries. Healthy people have boundaries. When we don't set boundaries, then we can easily become resentful and bitter. And isn't that true? Sometimes our yes has to be yes, our no's have to be no's, and our maybes have to be no's too. They just do. And you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with it. You have to set boundaries. Because if you don't, you are going to definitely burn out. You've got to be straightforward, and you got to tell people, you know, what you can do and what you can't do. I was at a conference last week. It was a one-day conference on behavior when it came to children. And the whole morning was about, is it behavioral? Is it sensory when it comes to kids? And it was really, really a good conference. But one thing she mentioned was certain kids have trouble self-regulating. And when those kids who have trouble self-regulating have trouble, they need co-regulators. And those are people that will come along them, whether it be aides or teachers or parents, to come alongside them and just help them regulate and help them be able to adjust. And so if you're somebody that struggles in this area of self-care, you might need a co-regulator. And I'm being honest with that. Now, thankfully, we have the best co-regulator, right? We've got the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is our comforter and our counselor, and he's our guide. But sometimes you need it in a form of a person. And so a mentor or somebody that, you know, can hold you accountable. I have people like that in my life because I need to, who say to me, have you taken a break? Have you taken a holiday? Have you, read a book? Whatever it may be. If you are somebody who struggles in this area, I would strongly recommend that you find somebody that can hold you accountable. Because you need to be able to, if you can't self-regulate, you need somebody to come alongside and, you know, be a co-regulate later for you until you're able to do that. Because if you don't, you will burn out. If I can't guarantee you anything else this morning, I can guarantee that you will burn out. It's too demanding. Ministry is too demanding. People are pulling at you, parents, kids, pastors. Everybody needs and wants something, and the kids people know how to do it, because we do. We know how to do it, right? But it's just too demanding, and you will burn out. And you can be kind and generous, and that's great, but generosity can't exist without boundaries. Because then what it'll become like you're a martyr, or you'll be doing it out of guilt or out of obligation. But it won't be because, you know, you're generous. So just remember that generosity can't exist without boundaries. You need to have boundaries. And you have to realize that the demands of the ministry will always be there. And it'll never be enough, right? Because there's always more to be done and things to be changed and people need this. It'll never be enough. But you have to remember that you're enough. And when we work from a place that says, I'm enough, we are kinder and gentler to the people around us. But more importantly, we are kinder and gentler to ourselves. And isn't that true, right? We can only do so much, but if we're not good to ourselves, we are not going to be good to anybody else. And you can fake it. You can fake it for a little bit. You can even fake it for a long time, but eventually it starts to seep out. And it's not going to be healthy. So I know I'm not only speaking to myself when I say this. I know there's others probably in this room that struggle with this. And, I'm just here to encourage you that you can't, you are enough, and you can't do it alone. That's all I have for you this morning. So I thought if you had any questions or any comments that we could, you know, do a little bit of discussion because we have about 10 minutes left in the morning. Any comments or questions or thoughts that you guys might have?
What are some of the boundary things that you've done personally?
No, that's good. Probably, and I know this sounds so crazy, but taking a holiday was really hard for me. And I know, I mean, Gwen is in this room. It was the hardest thing for me to take a holiday because that happens in the summertime, mostly. And summertime changes for us here in our ministry because what we do is we give our volunteers a good break in the summer, and so we recruit a whole bunch of new people that just come and serve in the summer. And so it's really busy, and I always just felt like, I don't know if I can take that time off. Well, if I didn't take time off the summer, then September's coming, and then the whole season's starting it. So, and I've had people say to me, you're taking a holiday, like you're just doing it. And so taking a holiday definitely is one of the things that I do. I do try to not take as much work home as I used to in the evenings. I would always be working in the evenings for sure and trying to do less and less of that and read a bit more, do some things that are just a little bit more pleasurable for me. Absolutely. So those kinds of things. And then, like I said, sometimes your maybes just have to be no. That's big. You know, where you're like, oh, I should do it. I could do it. Sometimes, and you just have to say no and not feel guilty, right? Because that's the thing. We're always feeling like guilt. We're feeling guilty about it. So sometimes your maybes have to be no. Yeah. Anybody else have any questions, comments, or? Yeah. 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 Yeah, well, we've been at it. We slowly started to transition. We first transitioned just doing it with our elementary kids. And that would have been, Gwen, how many years ago would you say that was? It's quite a while now. Yeah, about 6 or 8. And then we added preschool. And pretty much, and then we added our grade 5, 6, which are our older kids. So our tweens. So everybody does Orange from 2 to grade 6. And we really liked it. We've really found that we've been able to use it. And I mean, times we've had to tweak it because it is a lot. I don't, are you using it now or are you?
Yes, we just started.
Yeah. Are you using it for all age groups?
We only have very small.
Okay.
And they're pretty young.
Right. Okay. So you're using it as one group. It's a curriculum. Yeah, yeah. It's from North Point Church. That's where it comes from. And it is a lot. And so what we've done over the years, and particularly even this year, we've tweaked it a bit so that the volunteers or the leaders in the rooms aren't necessarily having to do all of it. You know, we're picking and choosing kind of what they're doing. So, yeah.
It's great because it's flexible, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's fun, like, too. It's relevant. I mean, it's biblical, obviously, but it's just kind of a different way of teaching that the kid we find really works well with our kids. Yeah. Any other questions that you guys may have?
How many kids do you typically
have? On a Sunday, so we have 2 services, so we're just over 400, I would say, about 420, 430, yeah. Yeah, so it's big. It's big.
What are your ratios of volunteers to kids? Mm. What do you try to keep that
manageable? Yeah, manageable and healthy. Preschool is a bit more. It's you know, our ratios are 1 to 4, 1 to 5 in preschool, and elementary is 1 to 10. So our small group is, you know, if we have a group of 10, we have one leader. A lot of our small group leaders now have assistants. So people who want to try the ministry aren't ready to teach yet. So I just throw them in with, you know, a small group leader. First of all, it's a great way for them to learn. A lot of times what ends up happening is those assistants the following years end up becoming small group leaders themselves. It's a great way to recruit that way. So I always say, oh, they're like, oh, I'm not ready yet. I'm like, oh, but you know what, you'll just assist. You'll just assist us in this group. Hand out, you know, the activity pages or the markers or whatever it may be. So yeah, that's basically what we. We have some behavioral issues for sure. We don't have one-on-one, and more now. And that's why I was at a conference last week because, and you're all nodding because you're probably all noticing this in your churches now that we need to start doing some things differently for sure. With some of our kids who have some behavior. We did, you know, we started a program a while back called Joshua's Friends, where the idea behind that was I would always look for buddies. So these aren't people who are trained in any ways, but they're buddies who would come in and just sit with that child within the group. We never wanted to remove children, so this buddy would come in, and they're usually teenagers, right? And it did work, but what was difficult was the communication between the family and the buddy because I didn't want to be scheduling that because I didn't know when. I mean, parents don't always come to church every Sunday. So I'd always put it on the parent to say, well, if you're coming to church and you need a buddy, then you're going to have to connect with this buddy who may or not be able to come every Sunday either. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a great system because, well, they're, you know, sometimes they wanted somebody every Sunday. And then what we ask, and it doesn't always go over very well, we say then, you know, could you please stay with your child today? Because it's very difficult when, as you all know, when you've got one child who's monopolizing the whole room just because, you know, it's not any fault of their own. So sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't work. But yeah, we are looking now into developing something a little bit more solid and consistent that will help with our kids who do have some behavior, whether it is diagnosed or all the undiagnosed, right? How many right? We have so many of undiagnosed too, and so you try to balance what it is. Is it more than behavioral? Is it sensory or is it? And so we've started to. We don't have them in now. I'd show you one if we did. We just ordered them. They're these wobbly chairs almost. They're like little rockers. Have you seen them? They stay close to the ground, but they move. So the child is sitting, and they can move their body because that's what it is a lot with these kids. They just can't sit still, and we're telling them to sit still, and that's an impossibility to them. It's like telling us to float. Like, they just can't do it. Their brains, they just can't do it. So if they're sitting in these chairs, we thought, well, okay, maybe that'll help. So we've ordered some of these. We also are going to start creating sensory bins where we have all kinds of fidget gadgets and things that, and you know, it does work. I mean, what ends up happening, and I'll just warn you, is other kids then want them too. Well, if so-and-so has them, why can't I have one? And what we have found, and I talked to OTs about this, or I talked to an OT about this, she's like, they have all this in schools now. All kids are very familiar with this. So if you say, well, it's not for you, it's for Johnny, then they're like, they should be like, okay. But if they all want one, as long as it's not distracting. So yeah, so things like that we're starting to implement, yeah. Do they work?
They work.
So they're still able to concentrate or focus somewhat if they're. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's what I always. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I always tell those kids. I say, if you're playing with something in your hand, you got to be listening with your ears, though. You know, still. So yeah, just we're starting to do some of those things. You know, they're talking about bright lights aren't great. You know, trying to, you know, mute your lights or put filters on your lights. They say that helps with kids who have hyperactivity. Yeah, so just a few things like that. It's a whole new world out there now, hey? For sure. Any other questions? Or yeah, it happened because one of our members here, who is an occupational therapist and goes to these conferences, she's like, you should come. And I'm like, yeah, I think I should. Like, it wasn't a Christian conference at all, but it was phenomenal. Like, it was so good because I thought, we actually all need stuff like this. And the way they explain it, like, they explain, you know, the brain and how that works. And really, like I said to you, when you're telling a kid to sit who can't sit, it's like telling us to float. Like, they can't do it. And we're expecting them to sit and don't move and don't disrupt. And they're like, So if we can help them move within, you know, a group and still listen, then I think we need to start looking at stuff like that. Yeah, so I would, you know, where are you from? Are you? Okay, yeah. I would see what the city has to offer with stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know if the one I went to, I think she travels a lot. She was so good. It was like a real eye-opening experience for me too. So stuff like that's really good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's trying things, right? Like I was saying, I mean, we're going to start trying these things and we're going to give it a ministry year to see if they work, and if they do, great. If not, then we tweak. But to, you know, try things every week in and out, that's not going to help. Hi. Somebody wants mummy. Somebody wants mummy. We used to we're having this room repainted now, because I'm sure you've seen some of the theming out there, so this room will change. But this room is our large group room, and we used to, in this room, break out into small groups too. It's okay. Can you picture this? So you got, like, you know, 100 kids in here, and now they've just finished large group. Everyone's happy, and they all go off to the corners of their room to now do small group. Well, so-and-so's looking at what so-and-so's doing over there, and then they're running over there. And the teachers are trying to, like, you know, they're talking super loud over all the noise. And it just wasn't working. We're like, we need to make a difference. We got to change something. So we have now, through that hallway there, and I could even show you, we've got breakout rooms. And we said to our pastors, it's actually a necessity. Like, it's not, we're not doing this because we just want more, you know, more rooms. Kids are having trouble focusing. And we think that if we have them in a space that they're not seeing visually, you know, or hearing what the other groups are doing, I think it's going to make a difference to them, and more so to our people, to the volunteers. Like, I think they're going to love it. Like, they're going to love coming in to teach. And so we started in September. Like, we've just been at it just over a month, and it's been phenomenal. Like, just something like that, you think, moving them from here to a space that's a bit more enclosed. Well, the teachers are like, they're focusing. I don't have to yell. And the kids themselves are enjoying it too. So you sometimes have to look at things like that within your churches, what can be done. And you have to bring it to your leadership and say, this needs to be done, not just because I want to be fancy, but it does actually do something. And it really does, you know, make a difference. And that's why we have church. That's why we want kids to come to church. We want them to learn, right? We want them to, you know, hear what we have to say. And if they can't even hear what we're teaching, and they can't even remember it, like, what's the point? So, you know, we really have to do, you know, always look at our ministries and say, what can we do to make it better? Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing, hey, how that, just that even visually can make a difference. And we were finding, like I said, with my people or the volunteers, they couldn't even get through the lesson because they're always saying, don't look, come back. And then before you know it, the kid is in another group, has just run because it's open in this area, right? So they're, okay, we have to do something. So, yeah, just little things like that that you might see need to be changed. You have to bring it up to your senior leadership and kind of give them the reasons why. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, for sure. Like within our, like...
Yeah, like all the volunteers, you know, some of them, everyone comes with a different...
Mm-hmm, yeah. Right, so... Yeah, so what we say in a classroom or a small group or in a large group, any setting, if there is a discipline action that needs to be taken and there's a child who isn't, you know, is kind of going over beyond just being, you know, active, we do tell them they need to, you know, remind the child, okay, it's time to... you know, put that away or, you know, hands to yourself and let's listen. And after about two times, I usually say to them, okay, then we actually call parents. Yeah, because what was happening is my volunteers were feeling bad to call parents because they thought it made it look like they didn't have control over their group. And you know what? We have to support our volunteers and it has nothing to do with that. But what I say to them, to my volunteers and the parents when they come, I just say, you know what? Johnny's having a, you know, a difficult day today. Maybe he didn't have enough sleep. Maybe he's not feeling well. So I would just encourage you to stay in group. Instead of removing, why don't you come in and sit and see how that goes? And most of the time they do. Sometimes they will remove. Most of the time they do sit. But we don't let it go on and on and on because it monopolizes the whole, sometimes the whole morning. So kind of two warnings. And if they're older, like if they're in grade 5, 6, I say to them, guys, come on. Like, you can just walk into big church now and have a seat by your parents. You're old enough. You know, as when they're younger, 2, 3, and 4, for sure. Yeah, elementary, a little bit different. But yeah, we give them a couple of, you know, nice warnings. Not like if you do that, you know, just kind of settle because you know, everyone wants to learn and listen too. So you're being a bit disruptive and... Yeah, we do call parents. That's what we do right now. Mm-hmm. I know, not easy, and everyone does things a little bit differently. I had an incident where I had to make a phone call at home to this past week over some behavior that I'd found out had happened after church, you know, after Sunday morning, where this child was incredibly, actually he hit the leader. And that's a no-no. Like, that's now really crossed the line. So I had to make that phone call. And I now have said to this particular family, and they were great. I said, until we see behavior changing, and he's not swatting at, you know, the teacher, you're going to have to come in and sit on with us Sunday mornings to be in Kids Rock. Because I don't want to remove the child. I want you to come in with the child. And they said, okay. Right? Because what good is it if you remove the child? Like, we want the child, but you now are going to have to help us and give us maybe some pointers, some tips on what works. You know, what kind of language sort of, you know, can we speak so that this child is understanding that that this is not behavior that's acceptable. You know, hitting, you know, another child or a teacher for sure. So, yeah, I know those things come up, right? Yeah. Anything else before we break, guys? No? Good. I'm going to pray. All right? Let me pray for you. And then it's lunchtime. Father, I just thank you. Lord, I thank you for these women. Father, I thank you that they've said yes to you and yes to the next generation. Father, I thank you for all the giftings you've placed, Father, in them, on their hearts. Father, the love that they have for the children. And for volunteers and for people, Father. God, I just pray that you would encourage them. That, Father, that they are like Nehemiah on that wall, that they would know they are doing a good work. And that they just got to keep at it and they got to keep on. And that, Father, that you are blessing, Father, the work that they're doing. Father, I pray you would give them wisdom where they need wisdom. Father, where they need grace, I pray that they would have it. Lord, Father, where there is unhappiness, that your joy would be there. Their fulfillment. And Father, I just pray that you would constantly give them creativity and open up their spiritual ears and eyes to hear and see different things in different ways. Father, we thank you that these are your kids. This is your church, Lord God, and we're just here as servants and vessels, and we just say, use us.